dream that you were cheating on her, so she woke up and stabbed you while you were sleeping.
What?
Huh? Wait, I get married?
Reggie's face flashed through 10 stages of perplexion before finally deciding on a thing to be shocked by.
Who? Who did I marry?
Well, he can't tell you that now.
Siowa immediately answered, intercepting the question, having already known what really happened to Reggie. He died on the front lines of a regular skirmish against fire trolls, very much a single man.
If he does, it'll mess up your chances of getting with her.
That's what you're worried about? Me getting with her? I need to know who to avoid! Bro, don't do this to me. Who do I need to dodge so I don't get pincushioned in the middle of the night?
How about me? What's my future? Do I finally become a bishop?
Adele asked.
Or wait, since I'm with this guild now... Oh no, did I ruin my chances of becoming anything?
I'd like to think being a member of this guild is better than being promoted anywhere else.
Siowa said.
We have the best benefits package, after all.
Well, if you must know. Yes, you were the top healer of our generation. Not that it mattered much for how long that lasted. Spencer was even a high tower mage before 21, Nick told them.
Wow!
Spencer blurted out when he heard the revelation of his past fate.
I made it to High Tower Mage. That's incredible.
I bet my dad was really proud. He always wanted me to reach the position of High Mage before 40. But those tests are insane.
I imagine they are. However, I think you could probably pass by the end of the year without an issue, Nick assured him. You're the best mage I know.
Oh my god, you made him blush.
Reggie laughed as he threw an arm over Spencer's shoulder.
It's okay, bro. You're my favorite mage, too.
You're just saying that because he brings ice pops to the forge for you when he wants to ask you for tools.
Maria laughed.
What? Don't say it like that. You're the one who told me it worked.
Spencer protested, looking like he'd been ratted out for something far more serious.
Meh. Cold sugar is cold sugar when you're running out of energy in front of those flames. I don't care about the reason why,
Reggie said with a shrug.
So what happens to Topaz?
Oh.
Nick scratched his head and frowned. He didn't actually remember how she died.
I think she just disappeared one day.
Yeah. Given the Bratva and my history with them, that seems plausible.
Topaz admitted with a sigh.
All right, last on the block. Maria, do you still want your old fortune, Red? Do you want to know how you die? Do I... I have to. I'd rather know how well I did, like Spencer.
Maria clarified.
You were a hero. A real one, Nick said. You led us through the worst horrors the world had ever encountered and then rallied the remnants before the last of humanity died.
The last of humanity? Everyone died? Spencer asked.
Except Nick. He's still here.
Siowa remarked with a laugh.
But his fate had to be sealed like the rest of us, right? He's just changing the future, but he still died in the future he hasn't changed. Right?
Reggie asked.
No, he's still here.
She insisted, drawing two lines on a piece of paper and then a diagonal line from the end of one to the start of the other.
He went all the way here, then back here, and now he's still here. Nick never faced the gallows.
So, it's a regression. Spencer muttered, looking over at Nick.
How'd you manage the magic on that?
I didn't. Alan did. But he died before he could use it, Nick answered before pausing for a second and then pointing to Maria. Actually, she died before she could use it, and then Alan died. And then I was the last one.
This is crazy.
Maria scrunched up her face before releasing the tension, exhaling loudly.
Okay. Assuming this is the case, and we spent that much time together. That'd explain how you know Tagalog, but you'd have to know some things about me, too. Like, what's my favorite color?
You tell everyone blue, but it's actually green, Nick said.
What does my birthmark look like, and where is it?
Maria asked. It looks like a toadstool mushroom, and it's an inch above your left...
Okay, no need to go into further detail. One last question. It's something I've never shared with anyone. What were the last words I said to my father?
That Santa Claus was a big mean jerk for not getting you the right toy, Nick answered. The toy that he then went out to buy,
dying in a car accident on the way. Maria's expression crumpled as she stared at Nick.
You really must have been with me to the end.
Yep. Nick sighed. He didn't know how he felt about the situation as he looked at her. While Alan felt just like the old Alan to him, the same artificer obsessed with items and gadgets, putting off responsibilities and opportunities to build just one more item just like he was doing right now by skipping magic lessons to work on his latest machine, this Maria wasn't the same at all. This was a kind, warm, hopeful girl who was scared of risks, who liked listening to music on her phone so she wouldn't get bored in the gym, and smiled more than frowned as she did her best to prove her worth. There were barely any shreds of the Maria he remembered in her, and so, as he answered her, he silently had to admit to himself that those moments he spent with her were the end. That Maria really was dead.
So, which 12 portals? Reggie asked, breaking the moment of silence following Maria's questions and Nick's answers.
I'll start working on the gear and tools we need to go forward. But don't think this is because I believe you. I just don't think another guildmaster is going to give me the opportunities you have.
Indeed. It would be good to research the dungeons ahead of time. Maybe we can clear them so they won't break, or figure out why they do. Maybe there is a spell that can help mitigate the damage,
Spencer started postulating.
Forget that. Weapons and armor are all we need to put our resources into, Reggie argued. Once we get strong enough weapons, the monsters can break any portal they want, and we'll still put them down like dogs.
Psh, weapons, spells, all you need is the right potion. I mean, didn't you guys see the power of them in that last raid? You guys went from Bruce Banner to Hulk with my creations.
Topaz bragged, throwing her nose high as she claimed superiority.
Not the weapon, but the wielder.
Siobhan noted.
Exactly, and my potions make the wielder better.
Topaz replied, taking Siowa's words as agreement.
That's not what I meant. I meant we need to train more. The difference between a level 2 and a level 3 skill is incredible. Even with Topaz's potions, if they increase the user's strength by 50%, then every extra point will be that much more important. Before anything, we need to train more.
Siowa explained.
Oh my god, it's like they're married already. I can't even tell the difference between them in conversation sometimes,
Reggie joked with a laugh.
You guys say what you want, but if we're done talking about this stuff, I'd like to get back to the magic lesson. The future high mage here still hasn't gotten me up to speed on mage basics.
Fine. Where were we? Spencer said, picking up his book. As he did so, Nick looked around at all their faces, trying to gauge their actual reaction to the truth. He could see the blank, shaken expression Maria had as she stared at the book, her eyes not moving even a centimeter as she was clearly not reading the provided notes. Topaz showed no signs of change, and Reggie was just the same as usual, too. Adele seemed unfazed, even smiling a little more than usual as she read along. However, Spencer, like Maria, looked a little lost. He was reading his notes to them more than teaching the subject as he usually would. His eyes seemed to keep darting to Nick as if he expected Nick's appearance to change while they were at the table. As for Siowa, she just grabbed his hand, squeezed it gently, and then gave him a smile as the two of them carried on with the lesson. Chapter 22
Begin!
Rosemary's mother Evelyn commanded, her voice as cold as her blade. Rosemary, upon hearing the prompt, immediately lunged forward, her rapier a silver streak aiming for her mother's heart. Evelyn parried with ease, her saber moving in a fluid arc, betraying years of experience. They broke apart only to collide again, feints and quick footwork blurring their forms. Rosemary fought like a tempest, quick jabs followed by rapid retreats, trying to bait Evelyn into overextending. But the Elder Gallows was no storm-tossed vessel. She matched her daughter's tempo, countering every feint with one of her own. Their swords sang a metallic song, each note a near miss, each harmony a brush with victory. Despite being over 40 years old, Rosemary's mother moved with a grace and speed that rivaled her daughter's. To the unaware outsider, it would almost appear as if the two were dancing as they jockeyed for superior position, lunging, parrying, retreating, and sidestepping across the courtyard. Rosemary's blade flashed as she rapidly thrust it at her mother, her aim so quick that any other opponent wouldn't have been able to keep up with the flurry of strikes. With a sharp, practiced eye, Evelyn watched her daughter's body language and seemed to know exactly when and where her next strike would come. Rosemary's face contorted, beads of sweat formed on her forehead, marring the makeup that covered her skin. Her brows furrowed and her jaw clenched. She lunged forward, sword gleaming as she parried and spun around her opponent to strike from behind, her form blurring from the swiftness of her movements.
"Predictable, my dear,"
Evelyn taunted as the matron deftly sidestepped a thrust, exploiting a momentary gap in her daughter's guard. With a quick snap of her fingers, Evelyn unleashed an electric shock through her sword that jolted Rosemary and sent her reeling backwards with a gasp of pain. The young woman's footing faltered, her breath coming out in ragged gasps. Evelyn pressed the advantage, her sword whistling through the air and forcing Rosemary to retreat. She desperately tried to block her mother's fierce attacks with her rapier. Each strike of the lightning-imbued sword sent sparks flying, crackling through the air, and electrocuting Rosemary. Her knees shook as she struggled to keep up, each strike causing her to lose a little more ground. Finally, the rough stones of the courtyard wall scraped against her back as she found herself backed into a corner with nowhere to go.
"When will you ever learn? You're too weak,"
Evelyn chided as she went to strike Rosemary with the flat side of her sparking sword. However, this time, the blade swished harmlessly through the air as it passed through Rosemary's side, dissipating the illusion into a cloud of dust as Rosemary's cold, sharp, and unquestionably real sword pressed against her mother's neck.
"I'm sorry, Mother, but it seems I am strong enough to take this match, at least,"
Rosemary replied as she dispelled the illusionary double she had transposed herself with. She wanted to smile and celebrate her victory, perhaps even gloat a little, but she suppressed the joy welling up inside her, knowing that indulging in it too openly would only invite trouble.
"You may have won, but wipe that pathetic grin off your face. One victory does not a war win. One battle does not an enemy defeat,"
her mother remonstrated as she vanished, appearing a split second later behind a pillar. It was the same technique that Rosemary had just used, illusionary charisma. Only Evelyn's version of it was still far superior to Rosemary's. She had been fooled by the faint movement on the arena's ground, the image of sand shifting beneath the false Evelyn's feet. It was just a tiny detail, but one that helped make it nearly impossible to tell the difference between the real and the fake. It was beautiful. Rosemary's face fell as she internalized the result of the session. She had been training even harder than before. After seeing firsthand exactly what the strength of her peers was, she had practically bled on the training grounds to reach their level.
I'm still not there yet,"
she thought.
"But it's at least better this time,"
her mother admitted begrudgingly.
"It's good that you're incorporating more of your moves into our matches. Now, how was the meeting with the young Nick Gallows? I trust the meal you shared with him after the competition was pleasant?"
"It was,"
Rosemary blinked, trying to mentally switch topics and recall the meal she had shared with Nick following the airship competition.
"It was nicer than I expected."
She had been so focused on the duel that her head was clear of all other distractions, but now, with just a single sentence, her mind was awhirl with the chaos of 100 thoughts trying to bubble to the surface at the same time.
"Excellent. I'm glad you were able to maintain a pleasant relationship with the boy,"
Evelyn replied.
"After all, you're going to have to see him again soon. Has he already given us the date for the dungeon dive to get his final ingredient?"
Rosemary asked, raising an eyebrow. Her mother and the family supporters would often spend a month or two preparing for the quarterly harvest of the dungeon, and that was even with her mother being one of the most powerful people in the city. The idea that Nick had already planned a way to clear the dungeon safely and set a date was beyond incredible to Rosemary. Evelyn shook her head, disappointment in her eyes as she frowned at her daughter.
"No, of course not. Have you learned nothing from our morning matches? The only way to assure victory is to control the pace, and the only way to do that is to ensure you are the one who takes the initiative."
"I see,"
Rosemary replied, understanding.
"Is this relationship with him that important?"
"Surely you jest. His wealth is astronomical for his age. His power, with less than a year of training in his new class, is beyond even that ice-cream-loving brute Roland's. His talent with pharmaceuticals is so great he's set to upend many competitors completely, and his insights into the future are peerless. Do you really think that a relationship with him is not important?"
Her mother rarely even breathed a single compliment her way. and Rosemary hid her frown as she forced her eyes to remain on her mother instead of drifting toward the ground as she listened to the woman praise Nick at length.
If he's so great, then why isn't he the heir?
She mumbled, wanting some recognition, since, despite all those accomplishments her mother rattled off, Rosemary had still taken the heirship.
Because he was a lion born to gazelles. They only knew how to run and leave their children to be preyed upon. Had I been his parent, his teacher, then his potential would never have been squandered, and his crown would never have been lost.
Evelyn declared with unfaltering conviction.
No matter how you put it, his crown is resting on my head now.
Rosemary shot back, feeling a little defensive as her mother raved about Nick. She hated that she wished her mother would speak about her with that same gleam in her eyes. Evelyn clicked her tongue at Rosemary.
You say that as if it's something set in stone. All power that is built on abstracts like finance, social recognition, or status is malleable. One moment a man may be king, the next moment his head may be in a basket. It takes little effort for a strong and precise needle to pierce the fabric of society and change the design. Nick wouldn't do that.
Rosemary protested, sure of Nick's character. No matter what her mother said, she had broken bread with the man. He was a kind, gentle, determined type that understood her well and sympathized with her struggles. He was not the vicious, underhanded kind to backstab anyone, and he had made it clear he didn't want to deal with the older gallows.
Wouldn't he, though? He's already put in bids to mercenary companies to secure armed men for a specific date at Hunter's Hall, and not just for one or two mercenaries either. He's placed bids on nearly 24 groups in the A tier and higher. Not to mention he's begun ordering the ingredients to make hundreds of potions and bulk-ordered special metals, and that's just what I've been able to find out without an on-site investigation. What do you think someone would need all that for? He could be preparing for a large raid. Maybe he wants to tackle a tough dungeon like ours. Is this for our dungeon?
Rosemary asked, thinking that it would explain how he planned to kill the obsidian Sky Terror.
He has a date for the mercenaries, but he hasn't bid on a single dungeon, Rosemary. Now tell me, what could he be doing with that many powerhouses that isn't a dungeon raid?
Rosemary blinked.
Is he planning a coup? I know he and Grandfather Gallows fell out, but no, this doesn't seem right. There must be more to it than that.
Rosemary insisted.
I need to go myself and feel it out. Exactly. That's a good daughter. Now I've prepared your excuse for the meeting. Go, endear yourself to the boy and put him in your debt. We've already seen how deep the lion's loyalty is for his pride. We need only secure your status as a trustworthy and reliable friend within his mind. I would do it myself, but given the generation I come from, he will only see it as the power play it is.
Her mother told her as she waved a hand, summoning a butler. The butler appeared in an instant with a large wooden chest held together by gold-plated metal with a beautiful filigree. As he opened the box, Rosemary could see that inside it were 5 of the rare ingredients that could be harvested from the obsidian Sky Terror. The feathers, the essence, the heart, the eye, and the beak. Rosemary gasped in amazement at the generosity of the gift.
It's so much. Do you really want to just give this to him? Yes, but make sure to stop by his alchemist first. She'll make his cure, and you can be the one to deliver it. Be his savior so that he will never attempt to retake from you what was rightfully his.
Evelyn instructed, swiping her sword twice before sheathing it as she turned and walked away, ending the conversation there without so much as a parting pleasantry.
Fine. I'll go play errand girl and then find out what he's up to.
Rosemary muttered with a sigh, holding the gift against her chest. She took a deep breath and resigned herself to the role of family sycophant and spy. Chapter 23. Nick worked alongside Reggie at the fiery forge, their movements perfectly in rhythm as they moved. The pealing clangs of hammer on anvil resonated one after the other as the men struck the metal like a battle drum, each strike bringing them closer to their goal, a spear crafted from spectralite, its luminous metal destined to become the bane of demons that lurked within the dungeon depths.
"Steady now, Nick,"
Reggie grunted, his voice rough as gravel, like it had been charred by the heat the two breathed in while they worked.
"We gotta heat this bad boy just right, or it'll be as useful as a chocolate teapot."
Nick nodded, his eyes fixed on the spectrolite gripped by the tongs. He turned the metal, ensuring an even heat. Even as he worked, though, he was already strategizing for the battles ahead. There were no shortcuts, only preparation, precision, and the right tools that could ensure victory. "Ready for the quench?" Nick asked, the sweat-covered strands of his hair illuminated by the forge's ember light. "Hit me with it," Reggie replied, bracing himself beside the oil trough. With a swift motion, Nick plunged the heated metal into the oil. As the spectrolite spear cooled, Nick turned his attention to the array of materials laid out across the workbench. Notes, blueprints, and materials to use against the myriad threats that awaited them. There were traps for ice monsters, arcana disruptors for mechanical menaces, ethereal nets for phantoms, and toxin-laced baits for goblins and spiders. "Reggie, make sure we've got enough silver-threaded wire for those light creatures," Nick instructed, his voice low but commanding. "Can't have them slipping through our defenses." "Gotcha covered, bro," Reggie responded, already rummaging through the supplies for the required components. Nick double-checked the concoctions alongside the weaponry, consulting a stack of notes Topaz had left, its pages filled with esoteric knowledge of monster lore and alchemy. Each potion was tailored to counter the unique threats they would face. Vials of frost resistance, oils to gum up gears, sanctified waters, and antidotes for venomous bites. Every tool, every weapon, every potion was a testament to Nick's determination to protect not just himself but his allies, the guild members who relied on his foresight and experience.
"Thanks for helping out. But you know we should stop for breakfast soon," Reggie reminded him as he set down the silver stock he'd found and looked over at Nick.
"Is it that time already?" Nick asked as he used the tongs to pull out the quenched metal. He looked down at his creation, a spectralite spearhead. He looked over at what Reggie had finished earlier in the day, a gearbreaker sword, and couldn't help but feel the difference in craftsmanship as he used Omni-Trainer's insight.
Gearbreaker Sword. The Gearbreaker is a specialized sword designed to dismantle and disrupt mechanical beings. Crafted with reinforced edges and a serrated blade, it targets vulnerable points in automatons and constructs, injecting concentrated, electrically charged mana pulled from the weapon's wielder, exploiting weaknesses in the target's mechanical structure. Insight note: regular maintenance is crucial to keep the Gearbreaker's edges sharp and mechanisms functioning optimally. Specialized knowledge in mechanical engineering may be required for repairs and upgrades.
As he read the notification, Nick's eyebrows furrowed in disappointment. He glanced over at his own creation lying on the workbench, a simple spearhead lacking the same intricate design and crackling energy as the 4-foot-long, saw-toothed swords on display. It was clear that his skills as a blacksmith were no match for those of someone with natural talent and enhanced abilities from their chosen class.
"The Gearbreaker swords turned out well. You got them to add that extra damage that you talked about," Nick commented.
"Yeah. And I've already finished all 5 swords for the team taking on that dungeon," Reggie said with a smile as he saw where Nick was looking. "With only a day to spare. How are the spectralite spears coming along?"
"This will be the last one," Nick said. "But I can finish it after breakfast, I guess."
"Good. Because if you don't show up for a meal on time, we both know how mad Sioa will be," Reggie laughed.
"Sure, sure. Throw Sioa under the bus, eh? You sure you're not just insisting we head out early for breakfast so you don't miss the chance to sit next to a certain Christina?" Nick asked, not having failed to notice who Reggie had been eating next to nearly every day.
"No idea what you're talking about," Reggie insisted as he finished tidying up his station and moved the Gearbreaker swords to a wooden box labeled Forgotten Protector's Dungeon.
Reggie and Nick had, after all, been custom-making each set of weapons to match the specific dungeons the team would be fighting. After Spencer had finished researching the Forgotten Protector's dungeon, he had discovered that the mechanical soldiers in it were extremely vulnerable to electrical magic. If it could be injected into them, it would act like a lethal, fast-acting poison that broke down their mechanical parts. Meanwhile, Spectralite was perfect for the Imp Slayer dungeon. The ghostly nature of the weapons wouldn't be as deadly as Gearbreaker swords would be to the mechanized creatures popping out of the Forgotten Protector's dungeon, but it would still give a significant damage boost thanks to the ghostly nature of the ore reacting with the demonic properties of the monsters. It was going to work. It had to work. They had, as a team, put far too much preparation into this plan for it to fail.
"All right, mealtime," Nick relented, picking up a towel to wipe away his sweat as he and Reggie left the forge for the cafeteria. As they left the forge, the heat of the roaring flame still clinging to their skin, Nick and Reggie crossed the vast practice fields towards the guild building. The air was filled with the sounds of combat training, the clashing of swords, the crackle of magical spells, the grunts of exertion. In an open field, some guild members practiced precise formation training, moving in perfect synchrony like a well-oiled machine. Nearby, others engaged in intense sparring matches, their weapons flashing in the sunlight as they tested each other's reflexes and agility. Farther away, some members delved into magical practice, weaving intricate illusions, cold or holy fire spells with gestures and incantations that shimmered with otherworldly energy. Nick's muscles ached as he pushed open the heavy doors to the guild building, the scent of sizzling bacon and freshly baked bread wafting through the air, a comforting reminder that life continued even on the brink of peril. The cacophony of clanging metal and shouted commands from the training grounds melded with the homey sounds of breakfast. He entered the dining hall, where his comrades fueled their bodies for the trials ahead. When they reached the cafeteria section, Nick saw that Siowa had not only saved him a seat, but she had also already stacked a tray with protein-rich food for him and had grabbed him a special Super Sap milkshake. Nick sat down to enjoy the food and the morning conversation as Siowa talked about how unrealistic it was for superheroes to catch people at the bottom of a fall without allowing for a slow deceleration, how it'd kill someone instantly just the same as if they'd splattered across concrete, except maybe even worse since the impact would be distributed over less surface area.
Looks like someone's been giving the anvil a good workout.
Elizabeth remarked as she sat down on the other side of Siowa, leaning her purple glowing sword against the table.
Only way to forge spectralite, Nick replied, grabbing a hunk of bread and a steaming mug of black coffee.
Gotta make sure our arsenal is demon-proof.
Siowa, ponytail swishing as she turned, flashed him a smile that blew away his fatigue.
And here I thought you were just showing off those trainer muscles,
she teased.
Trainer brains, Nick corrected with a smirk. Muscles are just a bonus.
Despite the light banter, their eyes revealed the gravity of what lay ahead. Each guild member carried the weight of their impending quest, their movements deliberate, their laughs a shade too forced. But Nick hadn't been eating for more than 10 minutes when their talk was interrupted by loud, frantic shouting behind them.
Excuse me, Mr. Gallows, someone by the name of Rosemary is here for you.
The guild's front office girl announced as she approached the table where Nick was eating.
Huh?
Nick blinked, looking over at Siowa, who looked equally confused.
No one's on your schedule, if that's what you're wondering,
Siowa said with a shrug.
If they're not on the schedule, they can wait. We're already pressed for time as it is, Nick noted before scooping up another bite of his mushroom and cheese omelet.
As he did so, he could hear rapid footsteps and more loud voices. Kaylee, one of the other women who worked the front desk, could be heard over the din of the dining area.
Excuse me, ma'am. Ma'am, you need to wait for us to...
I said she's with me, so just go back to the front desk already. We got this.
Topaz's voice sounded out next.
Hey, Christine. Who's the chick with Topaz?
Reggie asked as Nick turned around to see what was happening. There, he saw Topaz practically running towards them with Rosemary Gallows matching her enthusiastic pace.
Topaz?
Nick managed to ask just as Topaz reached the table.
Nick!
Topaz shouted back, practically jumping in place as she did.
Yes, that is my name. I'm asking what's going on, Nick clarified.
Nick! We did it! We have it!
Topaz said with so much jubilee that Nick had trouble imagining it was actually Topaz saying the words.
We have what?
Nick asked, trying to understand what could have made her this excited.
Now we have the...
Topaz paused and then pointed over at Rosemary, who looked like an awkward plus one to a funeral as she stared at Topaz's accusatory finger. Just as Rosemary, who Nick now noticed was holding a box, opened her mouth and was about to say something, Siowa interrupted her.
The cure!
Siowa yelled, seeming to have realized what was going on.
Yes, that! We have the cure!
Topaz exclaimed, her exuberance continuing to build. Nick found himself unable to process anything as he heard them.
The cure? But...
Nick, they have the final cure for your Mephisto's choking clutch!
Siowa practically screamed at him in joy.
Wait, Nick was poisoned?
Reggie looked confused as he sat there,
the T-bone steak still hanging on his fork above his plate of cheese eggs.
You idiot!
Christina snapped, slapping Reggie on the shoulder.
You know this. Everyone knows this. It's the worst-kept secret in the guild. Don't you remember? That jerk, Evan, stole Nick's girl and got her to poison him with...
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry, it's still too early, Reggie replied with a shrug.
Nick, it's your cure. You're finally going to be free of the poison.
Siowa told him, calming down and holding his shoulder.
My mother insisted that you get this as soon as possible, as she felt terrible about your situation, and...
Rosemary stopped.
I'm sorry. I just didn't want you to keep suffering, so I went to Topaz with the ingredient Mom gave me and came to you as quickly as I could. I know it's early, but this should more than make up for the inconvenience.
She held out the box, offering it to Nick. As Nick took the box and opened it, he found several different ingredients from the Obsidian Sky Terror inside, but he also saw a single vial in the middle.
You have to drink it right away. I made it myself,
Topaz said.
And I even left a scratch on the bottle, which I provided, so we know it wasn't switched out secretly on the way here.
Rosemary looked over at Topaz with an accusatory face.
What? Oh, don't judge me. You might seem nice, but you're still a gallows,
Topaz said in her defense.
Good call,
Elizabeth said.
You can never be too safe, be it working out or dealing with anyone. Right, whatever, just drink it now,
Topaz insisted.
It will be easier on you with a fresh meal in your belly too, so bottoms up, one shot it. Yeah, you can do this,
Siowa said, giving him some encouragement as they both knew how rough the previous poison treatment concoctions had been. Okay then, Nick replied, carefully taking the cure out of the box. Nick's fingers closed around the vial, the orange potion cool and heavy with promise. He uncorked it, the scent of arcane herbs, charged ether, and the acidic ground feathers of an obsidian sky terror wafting to his nostrils. With a nod to his friends, he tilted his head back and swallowed, the liquid cascading down his throat. The transformation was immediate and excruciating. Nick doubled over, a guttural roar tearing from his throat as Mephisto's choking clutch writhed and fought against its expulsion. His muscles bulged and tightened, veins standing out like cords on his arms as the potion's power surged through him. It felt as though every fiber of his being was being torn apart and knitted back together. Nick's skin prickled. Black sludge began oozing out of his pores, a malevolent substance that seemed to resist leaving his body. The room fell silent, the only sound the sickening squelch of the toxic discharge as it dripped onto the floor in small, viscous puddles.
Nick!
Siowa's voice was a lifeline in the storm of pain, her hand finding his. His body arched in an intense spasm, and then it was over. Nick's eyes widened in disbelief as he felt the absence of the poison that had plagued him for two lifetimes, leaving behind a clarity and vitality that Nick had almost forgotten were possible. He rose slowly, feeling the new power in his limbs, the solidity of his stance. His body felt lighter, his strength stat now doubled as it was finally restored. Each breath felt like a gift, filling his body with a renewed sense of life. Tears welled up in his eyes as he took in the beauty around him with fresh perspective. The air tasted sweeter, the colors seemed to dance before him, and even the smallest sounds echoed with a clarity he had never known before. Because he had lived with it for a lifetime, he hadn't even known how much pain he was in before. It was merely a staple of life to him, a dull resonance that he had tolerated, and only once removed could he fully appreciate the difference. A smile spread across his face from the pure joy he was feeling. In that moment, after two lifetimes of struggle, Nick finally felt truly alive. And it was the most beautiful feeling he could have ever imagined.
Is it working? Are those tears of joy or pain?
Siowa asked as she studied his face.
Nick, did it work?
It worked,
Nick assured her after a moment, his head still coming to terms with what life without pain was like as he used his sleeve to wipe away the tears.
Clearly it worked, Reggie interrupted the moment Nick was having with Siowa. Dude looks like he can bench press a dragon now.
Or at least arm wrestle one,
Topaz quipped. He reached for a nearby cup, only to send it flying across the room with an inadvertent flick of his wrist. Awkward laughter bubbled up from the group, but it was tinged with relief. They all knew what this meant for their fight ahead.
careful with that new power, Nick.
Elizabeth cautioned, her voice firm.
It'll take getting used to.
Understatement of the year, Nick agreed, his voice rough with emotion.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves,
Elizabeth said, stepping forward.
This is good, but we have work to do.
Right, Nick said, wiping away the unshed tear that clung stubbornly to his eyelash. He never thought he'd be free of the poison's relentless grip. Yet here he was, whole again and stronger than ever.
What, no time to celebrate?
Topaz asked, her usual smirk playing at the corners of her mouth. No time, Nick replied, steadying himself against the table, still adjusting to his newfound strength. We need to be ready for the dungeons in New Smithstead.
Nick, even I think a little celebration wouldn't hurt,
Siowa said, squeezing his hand.
Maybe tonight we could have a little party after training.
Fine, but only after training, Nick relented a little. And only after we've finished all the other preparations for the day.
Can I stay for the celebration?
Rosemary, whom Nick had completely forgotten about after taking the cure, asked sheepishly.
Sure. Of course you can. You're the hero of the day, but...
Do you want to stay for the training, too? Nick asked, but he knew it didn't matter. He could tell just by looking at her what she really wanted. Not to go home to her mother. Rosemary nodded.
Yes. Yes, please.
Great. Then we'd love to have you, and I can't thank you enough, sincerely, for delivering this to me,
he added, feeling bad he hadn't expressed his genuine thankfulness better.
Back to training, then. We've got dungeons to conquer,
Elizabeth announced, her tone brooking no argument. The fact she was as dedicated as his friends who knew about his regression, even though she was still in the dark and had only been told that Nick was going to purchase tickets for some dungeons, made Nick feel a little pang of guilt that he still hadn't told the Walters the truth.
I have to tell her. As soon as the Red Death is over, I'll tell her. I'll tell Mr. Walters. I'll come clean about it to everyone, he told himself,
even though he was still terrified that they would react like Alan had, rejecting the truth and pushing him away. Chapter 24. Nick had completed all the preparations he could. The gear had been forged, the monsters had all been identified, each group had trained to fight their respective monsters and dungeon bosses, the mercenaries' contracts had been secured, priests from Adele's church and some ambulances had been booked in case of severe injuries, and transportation had been hired so that if a dungeon break was defeated early, the participants could move to another dungeon break to reinforce another team. Every measure had been taken, and everything was going according to plan. Except one annoying little detail. None of the guilds in charge of the portals that were going to break had taken the warning seriously. They'd all claimed that they regularly cleared the dungeons they controlled and that it was impossible for a break to occur. Nick knew that it had been a long shot, but he had hoped at least one guild would have treated his warning with concern. After all, they were the people that had sharpened their blades and trained themselves against the monsters in those specific portals. However, he understood why they didn't believe him. They simply didn't want to. If there was one thing that the dungeon breaks had shown, it was that once a dungeon broke, win or lose, the dungeon was no longer there for the guild afterward. For a guild that occupied and kept watch over these portals, losing one of them was akin to losing their power. They'd not only lose all the drops they could get in the dungeon, but the source of experience for their members, the money they'd get from investors, and the built-in advertisement for new dungeon divers.
You ready for me to step in? Alan asked as he leaned over Nick's shoulder.
You sure you can do this? I know you've been practicing your skills, but... Aren't you worried you're going to get in trouble for this?
Nick asked his friend, but he could already tell the answer before he even finished the question. It wasn't just Alan who was ready to take things to the next level, but the entire group. Reggie, Adele, Spencer, Siowa, and Topaz looked eager to do something as well.
Why would I get in trouble for it? It's your name that's going to be on it,
Alan replied with a laugh before his fingers began to hammer away at the keyboard as Nick watched.
Are we really doing this?
Maria asked as she looked anxiously at Alan.
Yep, already working on it, Alan affirmed, brushing aside any concerns Maria had as he began to launch a series of encryptions he had prepared over the week.
The Daedalus profile image Nick had used when posting his dungeon guides and copies of magical books, an intricate labyrinth encasing a pair of wings, took shape on the screen, a beacon of their resolve. "Going live in 3, 2, Alan announced, and with a final keystroke, the message soared into the digital expanse. "The prophecy has been foretold," Nick typed in real time, the words transmitted to every computer in every home on every block within a mile of any of the 12 portals that were going to break. "The dungeons you are protecting are about to break, shatter, and destroy you. Monsters will pour out of the once blue portals and into the city, killing everyone in their way. If you do not evacuate your homes and leave New Smithstead immediately, you and your loved ones might die. Time is running out." At the end of the message, there was a clock with a timer ticking away, displaying the remaining time.
"Well, you nailed the creepy vibe, but do you think anyone will actually take it seriously?"
Maria grumbled.
"Creepy? It was cool,"
Adele said.
"The logo, the prophecy, the intrigue. You're just weird sometimes, Maria."
"Maybe, but if people won't even leave Florida during hurricane season, there is no reason to believe they're going to take an internet pop-up seriously,"
Maria grumbled.
"This won't do anything. How come we couldn't just hack into the news stations or something?"
"Because I don't have that talent. Like, don't be mean about it. This is the best I could pull off," Alan grudgingly admitted, reminding those around him that he was still just a kid and had only recently graduated high school. "Well, help or not, we still had to try. Now we just need to get on the plane and make it there," Nick said.
"Plane? What plane? You didn't have us book tickets. I thought we'd be having Will drive us,"
Siowal responded, looking incredibly cute as she scrunched up her face in confusion. "That's because we already have a plane booked. The 6th team will be providing it," Nick told her, revealing the last-minute surprise he'd been gifted just earlier in the day.
"Which Merc team is that?"
Siowa asked as she picked up the folders and started sorting through them. "It's not a Merc team. It's Jennifer's team. She's offered, graciously, to help us with this endeavor. We had a Merc group back out at the last minute, they didn't say why, but she's filling in. With her bodyguard and team, she should easily be able to handle it."
"Did you tell her about the Red Death?"
Siowa asked, looking a little frazzled by the revelation of who was joining them. "Nope. I just told her what portal she needed to be at and when she needed to be there. She didn't even ask a single question," Nick explained.
"That's suspicious. Are you two really on that good of terms? Did she really not ask for anything in return?" Alan asked.
"Yeah, even I'm curious. Why would she do this for you without wanting something?"
Topaz asked.
"It might just be to build relations with Nick, you know," Reggie suggested. "After all, everyone is trying to cozy up to Boy Wonder these days. I've even had a few girls from school tell me to pass him their number."
"Who? What? Why didn't you say so sooner? Give me their names,"
Siowa insisted. She looked like she was going to kill someone as her face went from her normal, mostly neutral expression to a sharp, killing glare.
"Easy there, Mrs. Murder Hobo. I didn't even keep the numbers myself," Reggie replied with a chuckle at the tense situation. "I'm just making a point that a lot of people are trying to get close to Nick now. He's not just a small point of gossip right now. He's a big figure on everyone's mind. No one knows what he's going to do next, why, or where. They only know, or at least think, that it will make them money if they can figure it out before others do."
"You all are overthinking it. It's probably something a lot simpler than that. It's probably to save Nick face,"
Maria suggested.
"Nick did her a massive favor by helping her avoid being engaged to that absolute creep, so she probably feels that if she tries to wiggle out of this, she'll be insulting him greatly. A big face slap to her friend to whom she is indebted."
Nick shrugged. "Eh, I don't care about the reason. The result is all that matters. And the result is that we have one more dungeon covered and a private plane for tomorrow. So pack your bags. Let's get to bed early. We fly out first thing in the morning." "And Alan?"
"Yeah?" Alan asked.
"Make sure you get your mom to pack us food. I need my biscuits and gravy," Nick laughed.
"Got it, bro,"
Alan replied, mimicking Reggie's manner of speaking, but coming out of Alan's mouth, it just sounded weird. With that, everyone went their separate ways. Even Siowa left early so she could still catch her family dinner. Nick had originally planned to go with her, but earlier that day, he'd decided he wanted to spend the evening with the Walters.
or as he thought of them these days, his own family. After the evening ended and the morning came, Nick loaded up the gear with the others, got on the plane, and flew to New Smithstead. The group was rather large, including Jennifer Zhao, her bodyguard, her personal assault team, many key guild members, the former Abyssal Knights, and the Walters. The private jet descended towards the outskirts of New Smithstead, its engines roaring as it landed smoothly on the tarmac. The rest of his guild mirrored Nick's intense focus, their eyes locked on the horizon through the crystal-clear windows. As they gazed out into the dawn, their breaths fogged up the glass, creating an ominous atmosphere in the luxurious cabin of the private plane. The guild filed out of the plane, their bags of gear and weapons on their backs, and headed straight to the conference room where they were supposed to meet the mercenaries before heading to the dungeons. However, Nick was surprised to find the room completely vacant. "What is going on?" Nick mumbled to himself as he stared at the empty room. "Several of them said they would be early." Siowa grabbed his arm.
"Did you check your emails? Your phone? Did they send you anything while we were in the air?"
Nick could hear the panic in Siowa's voice. She snatched Nick's phone from his pocket next and started to go through the messages.
"Crap, crap, crap! There's nothing from any of them except the artillery arms of Avernus Guild."
"What'd they say?" Alan asked as he leaned over to read the messages sent to Nick. "How do you know his phone's PIN?" Reggie asked, raising an eyebrow as he watched the interaction.
"We're reading,"
Siowa said, ignoring the question.
"They regret that freaking sugar fudge covered candy crisp!"
"What?" several people asked in shock at the same time. "She can't cuss because she's worried her mother will find out, so she uses desserts in place of cuss words when she really, really feels the need to cuss. She also finds it embarrassing, so it rarely happens." "I think it's cute," Nick explained, having only encountered Siowa doing this once in their entire relationship outside of this moment.
"Well, what happened? What's so wrong that it's got no one showing up and you yelling out random delicious treats?"
Adele asked, gripping the holy book she had brought with her tightly as she waited to hear the news. "Do I need to drive someone there and pick them up myself? Potentially whip them into shape and force them in the van?" Will offered.
"No, it's worse than that."
Siowa's eyebrow twitched as she struggled to keep her calm.
"Someone bought up every single one of the contracts last minute. We don't have a single S-rank mercenary group."
"What? Is that even legal?" Alan exclaimed. "How can a merc group just cancel their contract at the last minute like this?"
"There's a breaking fee for merc contracts, and they'll be required to provide a refund, of course. But yes, it's legal. The only time a merc can't break its contract is if a raid is already in progress, and doing so would potentially jeopardize the health or well-being of the client. In this particular case, though, since no raid is underway, there should be no legal issues,"
Jennifer's bodyguard explained.
"What the heck? Who the heck spent that much money just to screw us? Who the hell would even have that kind of money?"
Maria shouted, reddening with outrage. But Nick felt like he already knew the answer. "Who has that kind of money just to spite me?" "My grandfather," Nick answered, spitting the words out in contempt and feeling a little sick just thinking about how many people his grandfather had just doomed to an awful, horrendous death out of pettiness. "What a bastard," Alan grumbled. "Well, if this is how it is, then all the more reason we can't waste time," Nick said, taking deep breaths and closing his eyes a second as he tried to focus on the objective at hand. "If we're down 6 teams, then it's all the more important that we begin finalizing this meeting and getting to the locations early."
"What's the big deal, though?"
Mr. Walters asked as he, Elizabeth, Jennifer, and the others who weren't in on what the Red Death was all stared at the group that appeared to be overreacting. They had no idea what was going on or why everyone was freaking out.
"We could just rebook the tickets," Mr. Walters finally suggested, pointing out the obvious solution for anyone not aware of what the Red Death was. "It's okay to play it safe instead of sorry, Nick. The money from the contract cancels alone will pay for this whole expedition on a later date, so why not be patient?"
"Indeed,"
Elizabeth said as she nodded.
"Rome was not built in a day, muscles do not grow overnight, and patience is a requirement to lay any solid foundation. We can always come back again another day and only focus on the dungeons that we can easily beat by ourselves." "Agreed,"
Jennifer said.
"Don't take my assistance as a one-time opportunity. If you need to reschedule, I understand. I'll just have to let my uncle over at Dungeon Insurance know that... Wait.
She paused as if realizing something and then looked back and forth between Nick and Sioa.
12.
I'm afraid so, Nick said. I don't understand what you two are talking about, but I am with the others in cautioning safety. We should absolutely be careful. Lorenzo, previous head of the Abyssal Knights, weighed in. Stacy objected, putting a hand on Lorenzo's shoulder as she pulled out her phone and showed him the screen.
What the heck?
Lorenzo, who looked like he was about to let loose a string of obscenities, instead stopped himself as his eyes made contact with Sioa, apparently taking her earlier instance of self-moderation as a cue that no cussing was allowed around her.
All right, then. I guess that settles that. We already have our spectralite spears on us, so we'll start heading to the Imp's Lair dungeon right away. Anything we need to know before we get there?
Yeah, I guess I have no time to waste either. We already have the flash grenades, portable floodlights, and LED-covered armor for the Twilight Abyss dungeon.
Jennifer said.
We'll go over there and set up right away. Huh?
Christina blinked, confused by Lorenzo's sudden shift in both position and tone.
What did she show you? Share with the class?
At the prompting, Stacy just tossed her phone over to Christina, who held it far enough in front of her as she looked at the screen so that everyone could see. There, in the middle of the screen, was the warning that Alan had sent out the night before.
Oh, this is a prophecy from Daedalus, is it?
Mr. Walters frowned as he looked over at Nick. Even though he didn't say anything, Nick could tell he was a little disappointed. It wasn't an angry, judgmental look, just one that showed he was a little let down, and somehow, that cut Nick deeper than if Mr. Walters had gotten mad at him. Nick wanted to come clean right there, but Sioa stopped him.
We don't have time for whatever you're about to say,
she told him before looking at the gathered teams.
Everyone clear on where they're headed. You have your gear prepped.
Yep. I'm taking Queen Medicine Ball, Noelle, Robert, Winter, and Spence on a field trip to Eternal Frosthold. We already have the special thermaline winter jackets, the heating pads, the napalm bombs, and the cold potions, Reggie answered. We'll head out first.
Queen Medicine Ball?
Elizabeth said, raising an eyebrow as a medicine ball manifested in her hand.
Please don't hit me with it. I promise I'll get extra reps in, Reggie joked, causing a bit of laughter to break the tense moment as he rounded up his team and left the building toward the C-rank dungeon.
Even though a dungeon of that rank, when broken, would normally be pretty tough, with the gear and preparation they had already taken, Nick had no doubt it'd practically be a cakewalk for them, especially since every one of them was trained in Holy Fire, a particularly effective spell against ice monsters.
Then I'll be going with Andrea, Daryl, Joe, and Tabitha, and Mr. Walters will come along to supervise and assist.
Maria said as she showed her Gearbreaker sword. Even though everyone in the party had one, the reason they had gone with swords and the reason they had picked that team was to build around Maria and her abilities themselves.
We're all wearing rubber shoes already, too, just in case we get jolted.
Great stuff, Nick said, happy that everyone was ready to give this their best.
With their help, with their understanding, it wasn't one person against the apocalypse. It was an entire team of people he could trust and count on. He had a little hope now. They might not be able to stop the tragedy from claiming some lives, but if they were fast and they worked hard, they could still drastically minimize the damage done to the city. They could still save countless lives. Lou exchanged a look with his father, seemingly just as disappointed as he was about the prophecy, before nodding and saying,
All right, we're ready as is. We'll head out too. Don't worry, we brought Topaz's special pesticides to make sure we can handle the monsters for this, dungeon break.
Thanks, Nick said, turning to his own team. Arnold, the protector of the group, was presiding over himself, Sioa, Christina, Topaz, Alan, and Adele. It was one of the stronger teams, but given they had to take on the monsters within the luminous labyrinth, and there was only so much they could do to prepare for the dungeon ahead, Nick couldn't help but feel a little nervous. There was no guarantee they'd make it out unscathed, or even alive.
No, I can't think like that. We got this, he told himself, steadying his confidence before addressing the group. I won't lie to any of you. What we are about to face is not something you've ever encountered before. We're 6 teams down, so simply containing the damage won't be enough. We need to hit hard, hit fast,
and then move to the dungeons the mercs were supposed to cover as quickly as we can. When things erupt, if the prophecy is true, the city is going to turn into something the likes of which you've never seen before, so be prepared for the worst. Do not treat this like any normal fight with the monsters of the dungeons. I don't say this lightly, but I trust you all. I know you can handle this. We've trained for it. We've prepared for it. And even without the mercenaries, we're ready for it. Let's do this. Chapter 25. No matter how many times Nick had been driven somewhere since he regressed, he couldn't help but marvel at the world outside the window, the people walking around without a care, talking on their cell phones, and not even bothering to check their surroundings. It wasn't just the people, either. It was the intact buildings, the unshattered windows, the bright lights from the shop signs, and the way in which, when someone shouted excitedly to a friend or made a loud noise, no one thought twice about it. It was hard to get used to, but something he could never stop appreciating. "I can't let New Smithstead become the first hellscape of the apocalypse," Nick told himself as he took a deep breath and did his best to steel his nerves. The more he watched the world around him as they drove, the more determined he was to protect it. The only problem was that he still felt like he wasn't strong enough to do it. He brought up his stat sheet.
Name, Nick. Class, trainer. Level, 29. EXP to next level, 3,219 out of 11,050. HP, 680. Mana, 170. Unspent stat points, 0. Strength, 76 plus 15. Agility, 68 plus 15. Constitution, 70 plus 15. Aura, 26 plus 16. Magic, 36 plus 12. Charisma, 185 plus 30. Active skills. Training, 5, 2%. Get in the zone, 3. 62%. Frost Giant's Magic, 3. 6%. Charge, 3. 69%. Straight Thrust, 4. 4%. Spear Sweep, 4. 5%. Healing Touch, 2. 98%. Omni Trainer's Insight, 2. 92%. Sorrow's Final Laugh, 52%. Pep Talk, 92%. Cloak of Madness, 91%. Holy Fire, 2, 79%. Dragon Fist of Fury, 2, 11%. Passive Skills. Spear Fighting, 5, 78%. Sword Fighting, 2, 99%. Learn the Basics, 4, 84%. Nutritionist, 2, 16%. Enhanced Command, 2, 78%. Sword and Shield, 2, 12%. Tough Love, 2, 48%. Knife Throwing, 31%. Spear Throwing, 3, 73%. Survival Tactics, 27%. Blacksmithing, 2, 19%. Shield Offense, 2, 44%. Unarmed Fighting, 2, 61%. Titles: David's Descendant, 4. Clear Intentions, Speedy Can't Lose, 2. Drakeslayer, 2. Herbicidomaniac, Mass Murderer, Crustacean Crusher, 2. Realm Ravager, Hundredfold Victor, Hound of Helsing, 2. Redeemer of Souls, Battle Herald, Goblin Bane.
Even after all the dungeon diving, working out, and training, he still wanted more. His strength had risen to 76, and with the poison gone, he was finally on an even playing field with many of the others in the gym, but he still worried it wasn't enough for the upcoming battles. If his stats had been in the 100s, like Mr. Walters were, he'd have felt more confident.
"You still nervous?"
Siowa asked, sensing his worry. "No, I just wish I were a bit stronger," Nick answered with a sigh.
"I got a potion for that,"
Topaz offered, opening her bag to dig through it, only to stop a moment later.
Oh, never mind. You already have one, don't you? Yeah, we distributed them already.
Yeah, thanks for that, Nick replied.
You don't have to worry about bro, Alan said, once more trying to get the word bro to work. We're Team Dragons. We can do this. We're going to finish and close our portal faster than any of the others.
And you know it's true when even Alan is the one being confident about it.
Topaz remarked with a laugh as she pulled a vial out of her bag and spun it around in her hand. Team Dragons, eh? Nick said, looking back.
Team Dragons,
Christina repeated cheerfully.
I'm on the team too, right? Will, who was sitting in the driver's seat, asked. I've been getting my levels and strength up. Just hit level 7 yesterday. I'm going to be the strongest driver ever.
Yeah, you're always on our team, Will, Nick confirmed as he and the others chuckled at the idea of the strongest driver ever. Only the laughter didn't last long as the group had finally reached their destination.
The Luminous Labyrinth,
murmured Sioa as the dungeon came into sight.
Could have picked a less sparkly name,
quipped Topaz as she held the vial tightly in hand while Will pulled into a parking spot. While the mercenaries hadn't shown up, Nick was pleasantly surprised to see that the healers had, and not just one or two of them either. There were 4 high-rank healers from Adele's church waiting for them.
Do you have our tickets? Asked one of them, a bald older man with a long gray beard and more decorations on his robes than the others, as Nick and the group got out of the car. We already notified the other healers to switch their dungeons because of the mercenary cancellations. The ones heading our way will take at least 15 to 30 minutes to get here, though. Do you have the finances to cover their extra tickets?
Thanks for showing up, Father Pietro, Nick replied. And yeah, we have the money to buy extra dungeon tickets for everyone, don't worry. But if you could, can you all just wait?